You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Carrie Komarov. We talk about her career change. So Carrie was a teacher. She always wanted to be a teacher, but she's no longer a teacher today, and we talk about why that is. It's not actually a big controversial bombshell. I don't want to like make it into something it's not, but the reason might actually surprise you, or actually it might not. You can decide when you hear what she has to say. Either way, I think it's a helpful conversation for anybody who's thinking about teaching as a career, or even for folks who are thinking about any type of career change overall. She shares how she made this decision. She talks about fears, hopes, and what she does now. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Carrie Komarov, welcome to the Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Amy. This is exciting.
I'm happy you're here too, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. So I start all my interviews by asking my guests where they call home. Where are you on our big blue marble?
Yeah, I'm in the United States, Pennsylvania. So just a little bit outside of Philly, in that general suburb area.
Very nice. All right, I love it. So in a second, we're going to get to the topic at hand. But first, I want to ask you in a way to get to know you a little bit better, let the audience learn a little bit more about you. Would you share something with us that you do for yourself, something that you consider self-care?
Yes, I am big into purging and getting rid of things we don't need. So when I'm stressed out, I just pick a drawer, go through it. If it doesn't have a match or a place where it can live, it gets donated or sold on Marketplace or thrown away.
Really? All right. I love that answer. I very much love that answer. So I grew up living in a small apartment with people, and I'm not really a pack rat. I don't hold on to, I mean, I have a lot more stuff than I need, but I don't really have, I'm not a drawer stuffer. And my husband though is a drawer stuffer. He just opens the drawers and whatever's on the countertop, he puts them in there. And so periodically we've been married over 20 years and he's never noticed, but every once in a while I will open a drawer and I will like look quickly to make sure there's nothing actually important in it. And I will throw the entire contents of the drawer away just in one move. I'm like, all right, this we need, this we need, this we need. And then I just dump the whole thing out and he never notices. He's never noticed.
This is like the most successful purging experiences are when you're home alone. Because then nobody has any input on if you should keep it.
Right. No, that's very true. That's especially true if you have small children who are very emotionally attached to the things that they want to keep. So that is very good. Okay. The topic of the day is not emptying my husband's drawers when he's not watching. It is about how and why you left the profession of teaching. And I'm going to start with a question about intention. You shared with me on the intake form that you always wanted to be a teacher. Do you remember how old you were when you realized that you wanted to be a teacher?
Exact age, no, but when I look back at my sixth grade yearbook, because I'm somebody who has all of them, it says like, you know, dream job, and I wrote teacher. So literally from when I can remember, maybe there was a small period where I wanted to be an interior designer for a second, but like teacher was always the goal.
Teacher was always the, so what was it about teaching or the idea of teaching that you fell in love with or that you enjoyed?
Yeah, so when I was a teacher, my favorite quote, because I was a reading teacher for 10 years, so like it feels very fitting that I'm attached to like quotes in a way. But it was that if there is to be change in the world, it must begin with children. And so I feel like in order to play a part in the future and society and the community that goes long after us is to teach the youth, like the in my case, middle schoolers, how to be a good person, how to be kind, how to disagree politely, so that when they grow on to become the adults in society, it is a welcoming place for all.
Very nice. I feel like I'm not the first person to ask you that because you had that ready to go.
That was one of the first things I always started back to school night with, because everyone thinks they want to tell, you think that the parents at back to school night want to hear like all these reading strategies. Like, No, they want to know the person that their kid's going to spend however many hours a day with for the next year. So, yeah, I've 10 years of explaining that.
Very nice. That is very, so I have been going to back to school nights for about 25 years, and I will say there are times where I have wanted very much, or I've needed very much to understand what the agenda was, what was going to be expected of me and my kid, but most of the time it was really just about like meeting the person at the front of the room and figuring out and socializing with the adults, to be totally honest. And all right, so did you, as a youth, as someone who was growing up and growing into this, did you have role models and people you admired who were teachers who inspired you?
Yeah, sure. I actually, it was like full circle moment. The school, the middle school that I taught at for 10 years, was the same one that I attended. So my coworkers were my former teachers. So like I went from calling them Mr. McGowan, Mr. O'Brien, Miss Seiler to Scott, Jen, and Joe.
That is wild.
And all those three teachers I just named were English teachers. They're still my like friends today, and I do have my certification in 7th through 12th grade English, and then at a later date went back to get the reading specialist certification. So I do feel like there's a reason where I jumped to those names. They were my literacy teachers.
Wow. Okay. Very good. So you're actually not the first person that I've talked to about leaving teachers, teaching. Both on the show, I've talked to a couple of people who left different parts of academia, and also in my life. In fact, in a weird turn of events that is not related to our conversation, pretty much everybody that I knew that was a teacher, and I used to know a lot of people who were teachers, they have all left the profession between the years of like 2021 and 2023. I think I only know one more person, and he was very close to retirement, so he may have retired. So, but one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation with you is because your reasoning for leaving the profession is not related to the pandemic or lockdown or anything like that. You shared with me on that you've already said in the interview that your dream job was teaching 7th grade. Before we go any further, I am really very curious what it was about 7th grade that totally appealed to you, because I got to say middle school is like a quirky kind of time.
Everybody says this about middle school. The reality is that that's when kids are trying to figure so themselves out. They're going through all sorts of like social, emotional, physical changes. And I feel like if I'm going to have the most impact, it's going to be when they're looking for themselves and I can hopefully help them find it. I couldn't do elementary schoolers. Those teachers are the true angels of society. That seems chaotic to me. And I couldn't do high school because I just don't feel like I want to be this like authoritarian that a high school teacher might need to be. I want to be more of like a let me get on your level, let's learn this in a fun way. And I worry that high schoolers would think that that's cheesy or corny, whereas middle schoolers might still buy in.
Okay. All right. I love it. I absolutely love it. All right. So tell us what happened in your life that made you decide or realize that teaching no longer worked.
Yeah, so I have two little boys. I have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And when my husband and I had my first son, he was an angel. He followed every schedule that I set, hit like, all the milestones when he's supposed to. He slept at the appropriate time, if not sooner, that he was supposed to sleep through the night. And my husband and I are like, we are great parents. Look at
Look at us.
us.
We are
Yeah.
really good at this.
Like,
I don't know why anybody complains.
all right, what is there to complain about? So, my second one comes around, and every like meme I've ever seen of like your second child came here to like F shit up, they really did. And that's my second child. He's a tough cookie, and I love him through and through, but oh my God, that child has a world of his own, and he makes the rules. And when I was on maternity leave with him, it was a true struggle. I mean, you didn't just go from one to two kids. It felt like I had like thousands of things going on. And like your maternity leave is not great no matter where you are, unfortunately. But I felt like The time was dwindling. He still wasn't sleeping through the night. I couldn't even calm him down if he was in my arms. Like, nothing was soothing him. And I was like, how am I going to go back to a job that really requires a ton of energy and presence and, like, not care, I guess care is a bad word, but like really invested in it, when I'm exhausted. And if I can somehow pull it together for that school day for hundreds of other people's children, what's going to be left for my own children at the end of the day? And so towards the end of my maternity leave, I was already thinking, like, I can't go back this year at least. So I kept extending it as long as I possibly could. Not making any money is not an option for me. So that's kind of when I started to figure out what else I could do to have a paycheck.
I get it. All right. So I've never been a teacher. I always thought it looked like a really hard job. I have a lot of respect for teachers. And even when I was a kid in the classroom, I just always really thought it looked like a really hard job. So when it came time to choose what I wanted to do, I was like, oh, well, not that. But I also came to the realization that working a traditional job schedule didn't actually match parenting when I had my own kids. And one of the things that makes me laugh about the observation for me is that when it happened to me, I can literally remember sitting in the kitchen and being like, oh, that's why people don't come to work. I had seen people make this decision my whole life. I had never put it together why people were doing that. And this is why, this is why. It should be said that people do make it work. Like people do make this
Oh,
choice and
yeah.
they work it. But for other people, it doesn't fit. And it's a really, really interesting thing that has been going on for like maybe forever. But walk us through like the thought process that was going on and the conversations that were happening in your mind with your husband, in your family, as you guys were making the decisions, like this maybe doesn't fit or it's not going to work for us anymore.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it was an easy decision. I mean, there were a lot of tears and, weighing out pros and cons that came along with it for the pure reason that I loved teaching. I always wanted to be it. It felt like I was either quitting or giving up or like something that I truly have like the ability to do well. I was not using it. Like I was not going to be continue to use it to like my full potential. So that is really hard to like grasp, I guess. If you have all this skill in something and you're gonna not do that something anymore, is like it plays a weird mental game with you. But also when I got this job at the middle school that I went to, like this was my top school that I wanted to be at. So the idea that I got it and 10 years ago, I guess almost 11 at this point, when I did get it, it was such a competitive world for teaching. I mean, if you got the job 11 years ago as the teacher, you knew that you were the best candidate out of a ton of really good candidates. Whereas now, because so many people are dropping out because of, things have changed from the pandemic and, there's not as much support at home. There's not as much respect, I guess I should say, for educators. It feels like you can get a teaching job a little bit easier than you could 10 or 11 years ago, just because they really need people in the school for whatever reason. People
Yeah,
are
they're chronically
retiring.
understaffed at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So it
Yeah.
just, it seemed really hard to give up something that I always wanted, but then I had to remind myself, like, being a present and good and fun-loving mom is also something I always wanted, and I don't think that I personally could do both. And I know many people that do, and like they are the real rock stars out there because being a mom and a full-time teacher or a full-time worker anywhere is no easy feat. So it wasn't for me, and I felt sad that that's my truth, I guess. So it was hard.
Did you brainstorm and try and think of ways that you would be able to do it? Were there times where your mind was like, how, what needs to change so that I can do both of these things? Or did it always just feel like it was impossible?
Yeah, we brainstormed like, how many days of daycare would we do? Whose mom would we tap into on this day of the week? And it ultimately just felt unfair for the people in our lives for us to hand them a baby that's really unadjusted to the world, just didn't really want to be anywhere, let alone with like his own parents. And it also felt unfair to him that he wasn't really like at a stage where we couldn't be with them anymore. So we brainstormed ways that we could handle like childcare appropriately for me to do it. But the bottom line still came back to is like when we're all alone as a family of four at the end of each night, and I'm just sitting on the couch mentally drained while my husband's playing on the floor, that's not going to make me feel good either.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. You hit on something that is like a phenomenon in the parenting world, which is that it can feel like there are sides between parents who work and parents who stay home and parents who can do it and parents who cannot. And I've always really thought that that was kind of an unfair thing. It just doesn't feel like we should be pitching ourselves against each other. There are professions where you cannot opt out. Like if you opt out, like if you're a surgeon and you opt out to stay home, you're giving up your spot and your tenure. You can't come back, right? Or it's harder to come back. And there are other professions where you can drop out and come back and so on and so forth. But I can almost kind of hear that, and it's like you were like making a case for yourself, other people can do it, and I felt like it just wasn't for me. I just wanted to throw some light on that. Like, did you feel like there was a little bit of pressure that if you were stronger, you could be able to do both, or were you immediately like, no, this is not the way it should be?
No one's really ever asked me that before, and I don't know that I've necessarily questioned my strength when making the decision. It was more of like an emotional attachment. I feel like society sees teachers as like heroes. Like everyone's like, oh, so much respect for a teacher. I couldn't do it. Like more power to you.
I think I just said that.
I know, right? And it's like, I guess I liked being put on that pedestal of like someone who could do it. But I don't know if this fully answers your question, but like now that I've been running my own business for almost 2 years now, it's actually crazy that now I am well aware of how strong of like a leader and business person and woman I am. Whereas before, I like knew it, but I didn't get to call the shots. You just follow someone else's rules. And now that I make my own, I'm like, wow, I am way more capable than I ever gave myself credit for publicly. So.
Okay, that's really interesting. I appreciate that very much. I mean, I definitely do have a lot of respect for teachers, but I also will say that we do sort of sometimes put them on a pedestal, and not all teachers are the same. They're human beings, like all of us. Like d different teachers do different things differently, and I've had my ups and downs as a parent with teachers.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so very good. So you know that you're going to leave. You know that it doesn't fit any longer with the way you want to live in your family and the way you want to be a parent to your own kids, which I want to give you credit for listening to your own voice and paying attention to that, because there is a version of this story where you would have just tamped that down and been like, other people are going back to work, I will too. And it'll be fine because the other people do it, you know. So you listen to your internal voice, and I think that deserves some credit. Did you know at the time what you were going to do? Did you have a plan, or were you just like, I just know I can't do this other thing?
I guess I had a little bit of a plan because I knew that I needed a paycheck. So, if push came to shove and I didn't find something else that was going to help me make money and like provide for my like part to our family, then yeah, I would have to go back to teaching at the end of the maternity leave. So basically what I did was towards the end of it, because you can extend your maternity leave as a teacher for up to a year. You don't get paid for it. So I wasn't making any money anyway. So I actually came across my cousin on social media who also had a newborn sleeping peacefully in her lap, which was another level of jealousy that I experienced. But she also was working from her laptop, like saying how great it is that she could do both. And so that's what really kind of spiraled me into like, maybe I don't need to find a job that works for me. Maybe I can create a job that works for me. And it really stemmed from there. I would never was somebody who was like, I'm gonna start my own business one day. Like, no, I'm somebody who was going to be a teacher one day. So, maternity leave actually gave me this awesome no risk trial period to do it because I wasn't making money anyway, and I still could fall back on teaching if I had to. So I guess I did have a plan.
Yeah.
The
Yeah.
plan would be go back to teaching after a year and figure it out.
All right, very good. So you use the maternity time, the time of maternity, to try out this new thing, and you were inspired by your cousin. All right. So what fears and things did you have going on in your mind when you were like, I'm going to try this? Do you remember what things you were thinking you were afraid of?
Yeah, I don't. I didn't. I kind of hid it from my circle, my inner circle, for so long because the fear of like trying it, putting yourself out there and failing to me would have like, I would have been so embarrassed, which is silly because like a lot of people in your circle are very supportive. So that's just a me feeling that I would have felt embarrassed had it not worked out. So I feel like it took a lot of courage for me to finally tell my world on social media, so to speak, what I was doing. And honestly, it's so ironic that the time that I did that and like put it out publicly that I was starting my own business and I was running with it is actually when it like became most successful. So the thing that was the
Actually,
most scary was the thing that worked out the best.
that is a thing, that is a lesson that's in a lot of entrepreneurial classes, actually. So I've seen that, and I'm thrilled that that was your experience. So who was the first person that you remember telling that you were going to do this?
My mom.
Okay. And did you, was she positive, or when you began to tell people before you went public on social media, or maybe when you told people, did you get any pushback, or did you get all positive reinforcement?
I think the initial pushback, which nobody said to my face out loud, I think the initial thought in people's head was, this is some kind of scam, right? Like you're at the bottom of some type of pyramid scheme and now you're gonna have to pitch to your friends. I think
Right.
that's what was going through people's head, honestly. And I didn't like that. So I tried to make sure that I had enough experience with what I was doing to prove to them that that wasn't it. Not that I
Okay.
needed to, but I felt that.
I think that's very interesting. So you mentioned two things. One is that you were nervous to tell people what you were doing, because you were afraid of what they would think. And I think it's really interesting because we talked about teachers having a reputation of being very heroic. It's also a very secure and tested profession. So there was never any doubt that the job was going to be there, that it existed, that, that was there. And here you were stepping outside of that to do something totally different. So that makes sense to me that you'd be like, oh, if it doesn't work, what are people going to think about me? And the other thing is the fear that people will think that you were going to bombard them and try and get them to buy your stuff, because we have all done that. I call that my Roldan and Fields scar. I knew so many people who were selling Roldan and Fields, and I was like, hey, you see me. There's only so much moisturizer I can buy. Like, I have more friends selling this than I can buy product. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I really like you, but I can't buy any more lotion.
Right.
So I totally get that. All right. So I'm going to ask something that's a little bit personal, but very pragmatic. You can absolutely tell me to buzz off if it's too personal of a question. But one of the things that keeps people going back to their jobs in these United States where we live is health insurance, especially people who have families and things like that. Did you guys have a plan for that? Like, did your husband have a job that provided health insurance? Like, how did you guys do that?
So in this area, I can't speak to all areas, but in this area, it's pretty common that teachers are going to have better health insurance from whatever the spouse of the teacher is going to have. My husband and I might be that 1% where his is actually better. So ever
Okay.
since we got married, we were always on his insurance.
And so you did not have to worry about that.
We did not know. So the stars were definitely aligned for that. And I know a lot of other entrepreneurs now that I've like networked and kind of talked about like our goods and bads, health insurance and figuring that out on their own is definitely something that they have to go through, and we just don't.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot about it. That's why I said you could have done it, but it is a very legitimate thing. It comes up
Oh, yeah.
when you choose to be self-employed, when you retire, all of those things, and it is a legitimate stumbling block for people because that's the world we live in. All right.
And for teachers, I mean, it's normally that the teacher has good health insurance. We just happen to be the small percentage here where his was always better, so.
Yeah, and whenever I talk to people, I do a lot of stories of people going into business for themselves and the things that that come up around that. And so I've gotten feedback from people with follow-up questions, which is why I add these things in, because when people are doing the dreaming on their own, it can be really helpful to have people like say, "Hey, this is how it worked out in my house. Like, I actually didn't have to resolve that because I had this, or or this is how we did it, or all of those things." Because when you don't know what the options are, you don't know what the options are until you hear somebody explain them, is really what it is. Yeah. So, all right. So, do you ever miss school in the classroom?
I miss having an impact on kids. They were hilarious. Honestly, I feel like every day I had a new ridiculous story that like you can't even make this stuff up. So they provide a lot of enjoyment and entertainment that I miss. And I miss my teacher friends. I don't miss actually teaching, actually coming up with lesson plans, being micromanaged by people who haven't been in the classroom in 25 or 30 years. I don't miss the strict schedule. Like I could, you, to be point blank, you can't go to the bathroom when you have to go to the bathroom.
That's what all my teacher friends always say. They're like, "You're not allowed to go to the bathroom," which I have to say, I was in school as long as everybody else was. I never noticed that. I never, as somebody in the classroom, the kids are always asking you to go to the bathroom, but I never ever knew. I mean, I never noticed it. I don't know why. I guess it's because you don't think, when I was a kid, I don't think I thought of the teachers as like people, which is a really strange thing to say, but if that makes any sense, like I was not ever thinking about their bodily functions.
No, and like, you know what else people don't think of that is crazy to me? Like, I couldn't, if I was waiting for like results from a blood test from my doctor or something and they were to call me, I can't just answer. But
Yeah.
like, so if, unless they were going to call me during that small 30-minute window, you can't even get in contact with these, with people who are like trying to help you. But
Yeah.
so it's really hard to properly take care of yourself, I guess you could say, when you're doing any job that has such a strict schedule. Sometimes I told my students because they were in seventh grade and like had a little awareness of adult having their own life, I'd be like, hey, I have a super important phone call. If it rings, I'm gonna step outside and answer it for 30 seconds to tell them when's a good time to call me back. And you will sit here like angels and like instill fear of what I was going to do if they didn't say.
I think
Because,
that,
and you can't do that with little ones, which is why elementary school
yeah.
teachers are really strapped for it.
Elementary school teachers can be a really special type of person. That's true,
Oh,
because
I
they're
know.
working with very, very small people. But I have to say, if you said, "Amy, would you go back and teach middle school?" It would take a lot, because I just find they're charming. They're very, very charming, but I think it's a lot of drama. It's a lot of emotion all in one small body. And then a lot of them. So
Definitely.
that's very good. All right. So you shift and you start your own business. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to turn the conversation there and give you a chance to tell people what it is that you decided to do and how you made that transition.
Yeah, so my business name is Super Creative, Carrie Komarov LLC, which was really just in an effort to get started. Like, let's not waste time or mess around. Let's go. So I offer virtual services to people. I am a creative business strategist. So if a potential client were to come to me and say either what do you do or what services can you help me with, I would do a deep dive into what they have going on in like the digital space. See where their strengths are and how their strengths could help fill some of the things they're missing. So, for example, if they have a large email list, but they're not sending out any type of newsletter or communication, like that's a strength that you have a huge list, but an area for growth where let's get in contact with these people to either educate them, inspire them, or maybe sell something to them if that's so the case. Yeah, and I think of new ways to get their like their name out there. And oftentimes it takes people really trusting me and also stepping out of their comfort zone. But I've had a lot of success getting my clients on podcasts, getting them featured in online publications. We now implement blogs for people. I run some of their social media. I'm capable of making graphics. I'm not a graphic designer, but like any teacher, we can throw something very professional looking together in terms of like digital imagery. So yeah, it's a lot of strategy and offering them ways to solve whatever issue they're having, and then whatever one they pick, I run with it, I own it, and I completely handle it so they can go on doing what makes them money and I can make them look good behind the scenes.
Very nice. And how do you like for people to find you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, Facebook is definitely the best. It's just Carrie Komarov, and my website is on there. I will tell you a little secret about my website. I made it myself through Canva, so it's not like I can say, oh, go to www dot whatever. No, it's Canva, so it's free. So I don't get some fancy domain. I just have it on my Facebook, and on there you can find ways to book a call with me, tons of client testimonials, more about me and my family, so that if you decide to reach out to me, you feel like you already know me and we're not strangers. Yeah, so my website's cool and I made it myself for free, so I'm proud of that little thing.
Very nice. All right. So all the links to this will be in the show notes for the listeners and for everybody who's listening and doing something else, because people are often multitasking when they're listening to the podcast. The
Yeah.
easiest way to get those links is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community. And then I send it directly to your inbox and you can just click on it and find Carrie. All right. Are you ready, Carrie, for the final three questions?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it. Okay, if I find you on a rainy day, a Saturday, a day with no obligations, no commitments, nothing that you are required to do, what would you be doing? Would you be watching a show, a movie, napping, reading, crafting, or something else?
You would find me eating a bag of Sour Patch watermelon candies, watching some type of trashy reality competition TV show.
I love it. I love that answer. All right, that's fantastic. All right. If Jeff Bezos called and offered you a free spot on his spacecraft, the thing of the Blue Origin thing that goes up into space, would you go?
No. I
Asked that
mean,
question. I've asked that question before. So far, nobody said yes.
yeah, I'm thinking, like, what kind of personality is going to be like, let's do that? No, I need gravity and I need to feel grounded. First of all, I'm scared of heights, so no.
Okay, very good. I think it's a really fun question to ask people. I'm like, what'd you got? Like, so, all right. If you won the lottery, like think like Powerball level lottery, somebody hands you a check for $50 million. What would be the very first thing that you would buy for yourself?
Oh, for myself?
A tricky,
I
tricky.
know. I think probably a beach house. We go to like the Jersey Shores all the time, and I would like to have my own. And depending on how much it was, maybe it would be on one of those streets where like the bay is 2 blocks away and the beach is also 2 blocks away.
Very nice. What's your favorite part of the Jersey Shore?
We go to Ocean City.
Oh, I love it there. I
I
love
know
it
it's
there. I
so
also
family
love,
friendly. My
yeah.
kids love it. I feel like I know it like the back of my hand.
That is a spectacular. There's the Jersey Shore is enormous, so there's a bunch of different places to go, but there's so many beautiful, beautiful parts of it. That's it, Carrie Komarov. Thank you for being a wonderful guest on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.